Hi, it's Dave. Welcome to a new live show. Today I'm doing a video where I never thought I would do a video about gold, but here it is. This morning I bought some gold. I'm going to share kind of my rationale on why I bought gold, my outlook going forward, and really kind of give my thought processes in this whole process. So I hope you guys enjoy this video. All right, so I'm not a big gold fan. I've never been a big gold fan. I always felt like it was just like a static kind of metal, right? That people would maybe just keep in case of like, disasters. And I never really saw the potential. I'm a big kind of more innovation guy. I want to invest in companies that create value, that create products that I'm one to bet on innovation, on the in the ingenuity, the genius of man, basically, to create new things, right? And that's where I see the most value. And so today, this morning, I was kind of surprised that I actually bought gold. And I wanted to share my thought process behind this. All right, before we begin, first is I'm thinking out loud, right? This is not financial advice. This is not investment advice. And mostly because every person's situation is extremely different and unique, including my own, right? And the amount that I purchase or what I invest in really is part of a bigger picture, right? A bigger investment philosophy. So for me personally, I have kind of some safe assets in real estate that are income producing that cover my family's living expenses. And then it frees me up to be more aggressive to go after growth opportunities. And my biggest interest is more in high growth, right? Big winners, like for example, Tesla. However, I've been changing my kind of and developing my investment philosophies over time. And this whole coronavirus has really kind of giving me opportunity to think a little bit more outside the box. And I think even in my investment philosophies, I kind of want to have a little bit more diversified approach. Typically, historically, I've never really liked gold personally. First, because again, it doesn't produce any products or services. There's no innovation, right? Gold is gold today, as it was 5,000 years ago, right? It's not really making anything new. Second is it's difficult to value gold, especially because it doesn't really have any earnings, right? It's not like they have a quarterly report or an annual report on gold, how much gold has produced or earned for the year, right? It's just so static. And lastly, I think gold has historically underperformed the market, right? If you want to invest something long term, just invest in the index fund, right? The S&P 500, the total market fund. There's a bunch of these funds where you can outperform gold historically, right? And betting on the best of companies in the world, the most innovative companies, I think, is a much better overall investment philosophy than investing in kind of like the static piece of metal, right? All right. And some people like to approach gold as like a store of value, right? They go, oh, you have to have 10% or 20%, 30% of your assets in gold because it's something secure. Personally, though, I don't really buy that whole store of value argument because I prefer actually a store of value more in real estate over gold. First reason is because I think real estate can give an income, right? Gold typically doesn't give you dividends or, it's just kind of there, right? It doesn't produce anything. But at least with real estate, you can use it, right? People can use the real estate. And real estate also can track inflation, right? As does gold at times. I also think it's easier to value real estate because you can give kind of a valuation off of its income, right? Its annual income. And you give a multiple off of that to come up with a valuation with real estate. With gold, it's much more difficult to value. Also, with real estate, you can find, and if you really are diligent, you can actually find a generational real estate piece. I mean, something that's just amazing, that is just mind-boggling, that in terms of its quality, right? And a lot of times, people just settle for like a second best or just okay real estate. But in my opinion, if you can actually have an opportunity to get into a generational, meaning like top of the top 1% type of real estate that really holds its value and grows over time is fantastic. Lastly, people are all into Bitcoin, cryptocurrency as a store of value, but my whole thing is, A, with Bitcoin and crypto, Ethereum, Bitcoin Cash, all this stuff, there's so much uncertainty, right? Do we really know what Bitcoin or Ethereum or these other cryptos are going to be like in 5 or 10 years? And you have people saying, oh, they're going to replace fiat, right? And all this stuff. But really, are governments really going to let crypto, these independent crypto, let's say blockchains, replace fiat, right? Fiat is like existential. The ability to print money for these governments is existential. I don't see governments really anytime soon allowing crypto really to take over. And the crypto fans are going to say, oh no, the governments, are their debt is going to do them in and they'll have no choice and crypto is going to grow. But I have my concerns. I've done a video on Bitcoin a few months ago. You can take a look at that. All right, so overall, my personal investment philosophy is actually to invest in innovation over a store of value, right? I'm not really a big type of like real estate person as well, or like a Bitcoin or gold person. I'd rather invest in the best companies in the world. I think long term, that's the best philosophy. Now, we're in an uncertain time right now, and this is a very, very interesting time for to say the least, right? And you have this global pandemic that's caused the stock market to tank. The Dow went from like almost 30,000 to 18,500. So now it's bounced back, right? About halfway. And there's a lot of talk about a V-shaped recovery. Like some people are saying, oh, this is just going to pass us by. The economy's going to bounce right back. Don't worry about it, right? And many stocks have rebounded very quickly, right? If you look at a lot of the stocks in the stock market, the big names, Apple, Amazon, Google, Netflix, Shopify, even Tesla. Lots and lots of companies have rebounded and they're approaching their all-time highs or even, surpass them. But however, there's a great possibility and a scenario of a second wave or multiple waves, right? And there's a lot of possibility of ongoing economic pain, right? Where we don't see this quick V-shaped recovery. We can see this getting drawn out for a few years or for even longer, right? And so because of this uncertainty, this has gotten me to think about different investment opportunities or possibilities. Now, the biggest scenario that I personally am most concerned about is debt crisis, right? What I mean by debt crisis is I feel like there's going to be some countries that are ri at risk of a debt crisis. Now, I think the US is less at risk because they print their own money. They're probably, they have one of the strongest, obviously, currencies in the world. They have more options at their disposal, right? So even though the US has like, what, over $20 trillion, probably approaching $30 trillion in debt, the US has a lot more levers at hand. However, there are a lot of companies or countries that don't have the same options or tools as the US. And these countries, they're getting lower tax revenue because their economies are getting shut down. They're increasing their government spending because they need to somehow stimulate, right, the economy, but also help people out who aren't working. And because of that, they have a growing debt. And when you have a growing debt, you need more monthly payments to service that debt, but you don't have that tax revenue. And your tax revenues hit really substantially. And now the creditors and the people who hold the debt now get into kind of a confidence crisis, right? Where they don't trust that company anymore. They increase the interest rate charged to these countries. And this spirals oftentimes into a situation of inflation where the government starts to print money just to pay its debts. And then the people start to flock to foreign currency and to gold, right? They're going to places where there's safety. Now, some people are saying, oh, Bitcoin, right? The people are going to flock to Bitcoin. But I don't know, man. It's like countries around the world, people with money, it's like their local, let's say, economy or countries having to say some type of debt crisis. Are they really going to flock to Bitcoin? I mean, possibly, who knows? Maybe some people, but I think they're going to flock to the dollar. They're going to flock to gold, right? If the US has increasing problems, then they might flock to even more gold. All right, so here's kind of my personal thoughts. And again, this is all just thinking out loud. This is not advice. I haven't figured it out. I'm just kind of sharing my initial type of ongoing ideas. I think if some or many countries experience some type of debt crisis and the demand for gold rises, then the price of gold will likely rise as well, right? So it's kind of a straightforward thesis here. How much will it rise? It really depends on how severe the debt crises are, right, in different countries, and how many countries, right, experience debt crisis, and will those people who hold money, right, let's say the middle and rich class, will they actually go after gold? I think historically that's happened. And the timing is also uncertain because it's like, hey, when will this happen? Will it happen in the next 6 months? Will it happen in the next 12 months? Next 18 or 24 months, right? The timing is unclear too. So the severity of, let's say, the debt crisis is the amount of demand for gold and also the timing. All of this stuff is uncertain, in my opinion. All right, so how do you invest in gold? And this is, again, just my personal first take into gold. I'm not an expert in gold by any means. I don't claim to be, and I'm just learning this stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that's probably wrong in this presentation or I've left out. First, you can invest in physical gold, right? You can actually buy gold coins, right? It's called bullions, and there's different types of gold coins, but usually the best are the ones like issued by the government. Let's say the US government issues gold coins. You can buy them online. You can buy them at your local gold shop. And you can just keep them, right? Or you can store them in a safe. You can actually buy them in a different country like Singapore and store them. The next thing is, you can invest in a gold ETF, right? And this is an electronic traded fund. It's a fund where they can actually, you can buy it like a stock, right? So you can buy one share or two shares or 50 shares. And there are certain ETFs that actually track the price of gold, right, on the market. Third thing is, you can actually buy mining stocks, right? You can buy these companies who are involved with mining gold. So these companies you can buy individually, and you can buy their stocks as companies, and you have to analyze their companies, or you can buy them as an ETF, right? And they're groupings of these gold mining stocks. And there are going to be other ways you can invest in gold as well. The investment community has found a ton of ways to do many different things. All right, I found just recently this simple ETF. It's called GLD. So this, yeah, GLD, and it's part of the SPDR family of ETFs, and it's managed by State Street Global Advisors. So these are just kind of a big kind of a group of ETFs from this company. And this ETF, a GLD ETF, unlike other many ETFs which represent ownership in a basket of stocks, this ETF is designed to initially track the price of a tenth of an ounce of gold, right? So whatever the stock, kind of the spot price of gold, the going price of 1 ounce of gold, this stock or this ETF is going to try to track one tenth of that ounce, right? And if the share price differs from the gold market price, the fund manager exchanges blocks of 100 shares for 10,000 ounces of gold, right? So this is this helps the ETF price keep roughly in line with the price of gold, even though the prices can diverge during each day. Okay, so it's pretty simple. They take some fees, but this is kind of an easy way to kind of invest into gold if you're really wanting to. All right, so you can invest into GLD, the ETF, either through stocks, like you simply just like you buy a stock of, let's say, Ford or Tesla or Google. You can do the same thing, right? Just in your stock brokerage account, just type in GLD. Or you can actually invest into GLD as in options or option calls. Now, stock is probably for most people because it's less complicated and there's less volatility. It's very similar to investing in, like, say, a piece of stock of an ETF or mutual fund. However, if you're gonna get an option call or get into options, an option call is a contract, and it is a contract where it legally actually gives you the ability to buy a stock at a certain price by a certain date in the future, right? And let's say you think stock's gonna double, or say within a year or two, an option call, you can buy it below, let's say, the doubling price, and they'll give you the option to buy it or not if you want. However, options have a high probability of expiring worthless because oftentimes you think it's going to double, you buy an option call, right, to purchase it at a higher price than what the stock is right now, but it never reaches that price. So you lose your entire, right, premium that you paid for your option. So that's kind of like the difficulty or the challenge and the risk with option calls. All right, for me personally, I went ahead and this morning I bought some GLD option calls. I started a very small position. With January 2020 200 strike calls. Okay, what this means is right now GLD is at about $163, I believe. Okay, so what my bet is I'm betting that GLD, or actually this contract is going to give me the legal right to buy GLD in January 2020, right? There's an expiration date, I think January 21st or so. On that date, by that date, I can buy GLD for $200, right? So if GLD is $300 on that date, I still can buy it for $200, right? So I save basically $100, right, per share. So how much does this option call cost? So the option call price is like $10 for this 200 strike call expiring in about a year and a half or 2 years. And each option contract can control 100 shares. So actually the true cost of the contract is actually going to be $1,000, right? So it's going to cost $10 per share that I control for GLD. So I can control 100 shares, so it's going to cost me $1,000 per contract. So in January 2022, I can buy 1,000 or 100 shares, right, of GLD for $200. Now, I'm betting GLD stock price is going to be over $210 by the January 22 expiration date, or else my options will expire, you know, not just worthless, but, you know, I can't get the premium back. All right, so what does all this mean? Why am I trying to bet, right, for gold, that gold will go up from 163, at least GLD, to over $210 within 2 years, right? What's the rationale? All right, here's the rationale behind me personally doing this move. First is, I've already kind of invested so heavily in Tesla, and my entire portfolio is like so heavy in Tesla at this moment, right? Over 90%, right, of my liquid assets is in Tesla, right? And I'm actually not really wanting to liquidate that much of Tesla because I've got a lot of tax liabilities if I liquidate Tesla, and I believe in the future of Tesla and innovation. But I am concerned about the economy, and especially these debt crises around the world. And not just, I'm not really specifically worried about the US as much as I am about other countries that I think aren't in the same situation and have the same tools as the US. So as a hedge to these debt crises and maybe to a global kind of economic shock or global kind of ongoing recession or depression, I want to kind of have a hedge, right? And so if these options expire worthless to me, great, right? That means the debt crisis didn't unfold across the world, or at least through many countries. And my main investment in Tesla is very, very secure, or is more secure because there wasn't this global kind of economic shock. All right, here's a quick summary. So personally, I don't really know too much about investing in gold, right? I'm still learning, but I wanted to share kind of this process as I'm learning and going through it. And the whole point of my channel is not to really pick stocks per se, but to help people kind of go through some clear thinking exercises, right? To kind of look at things from different angles. And I think one of the most important things is for me to be transparent with what I'm doing. Currently, my position in GLD is like less than 0.1% of my portfolio, right? It's actually probably much, much less than that right now. So it's a tiny, tiny portion of my portfolio. And I'm not inclined to share my every purchase. So I don't know what I'm gonna be doing with my GLD position over time, whether it's gonna grow, whether I'm gonna sell. And I'm not gonna per se like feel responsible to share everything I'm doing. But I'd like to share kind of the rationale why I got into this position. All right, one last thing. This past week, I got this interesting book. It's called Big Debt Crisis by Ray Dalio. So Ray Dalio from Bridgewater Associates, he's a macro investor, like billionaire, kind of legendary investor. And he wrote this kind of book, and it's actually three kind of small books here on debt crisis, to understand debt crisis. So I wanted to kind of read through it. And I was actually surprised. I thought it was it's well written, it's kind of dense, but he has an interesting thesis about debt. And what he says is, and this is what I take from it, because if you listen to him on YouTube, it's a little bit harder to understand. But my summary is this, is there debt cycles, right? And one cycle is a long-term debt cycle, which actually kind of flows together with the ups and downs of global empires. As a global empire or country kind of reaches its peak or prosperity, they start to borrow so much money, and that ends up in a long-term debt crisis, which ends up being their downfall and another country's right upbringing. Now, there's also these short-term kind of debt crises where happen maybe every 10, 15 or so years, where in this short-term cycle, people start borrowing too much money because they think the boom bull market is going to last forever. And that borrowing too much money then starts to lead to debt problems, and that takes a time of correction. So in Ray Dalio's book, he has this thing where there's a section called, you have the early part and then you have the bubble. You have the top and then you have a depression. After the depression, you deleverage, right, which you lower your debt and you go for normalization. Now, in this process, he has this thing where he's kind of mapped out equity prices, and he's kind of done his own case study on kind of like 45 cases of countries and situations of people going through kind of these debt crises. And in his research, he's saying that the equity price or the stock market price, right, it tops out in this stage number 3, right? Here's the top. And then during this depression, it goes down, and this is of course very, very rough, but it goes down about 50%. And in his research, he's typically found that the average time is like 3 years for countries to get out of, right, this kind of depression stage. So a couple things kind of stood out for me is, if we're looking at kind of like our current situation, right, and we think we're going to do this quick V-shaped thing where it's like 2 months, right? We're in this like, or 3 months, we're just out of it, right? And we're just going to continue to grow. That's a very kind of unique situation, which historically really hasn't happened that often, right? Typically, what happens, and especially if the problem is not a pandemic, just a pandemic, if the problem really is a debt crisis, meaning a short-term debt cycle, where we've built up a lot of debt around the world, and the governments are having a hard time, let's say, you know, stimulating the economy because there's a lot of debt, then what's going to happen, according to Ray Dalio, is that this stage of readjusting is going to be longer than what a lot of people in the media or investors think. It could last a good few years. Now, here's another chart in this book, and it talks about the price of gold. And he does the same kind of cycles of the early part, the bubble, the top, the depression, the deleveraging, right, and pushing to normal. And in this chart, he shows that during the top, right, during the beginning stages, gold is like pretty low, right? And then during this depression, you have the price of gold just continue to go up, right, during the depression. And it continues to go up actually a little bit while it's normalized, and then it starts to go back down. And when I started to look at this kind of this chart and kind of understand what he was talking about, debt crisis, I started to think, yeah, I think the main issue that Ray Dalio is pushing, he's saying that in a debt crisis, people want to flock to safety, right? And in their local, if their local currency is having an inflation crisis, right? And if you've ever studied inflation crisis, like study recently, like Argentina or even Turkey or even what Brazil is going through, like this is really serious stuff. The people with money want to flock to safety, right? And when they flock to safety, their first kind of choice of asset is either US dollars or gold, right? And if US dollar is shaky, then they want gold. And in that sense, I'm starting to think, you know, maybe there's going to be an increase in demand of gold. Of course, all of this is speculation. I wouldn't want anyone just to invest in gold because I did it, right? It's more trying to understand the thought process. All right, I'm going to open up for questions here. If you have a question, go ahead and write question in all cap. Follow it with two colons, and then I'll have a chance to go ahead and read through some of the questions. If you've asked a question during this live kind of show previously, go ahead and repost the question so I have a chance to read the question. All right, here's a couple questions I thought I brainstormed myself. It says, why did you buy a gold ETF rather than a gold miner ETF? And it's just basically, you know, I don't think I know much about the gold industry, and yeah, I don't really feel like I want to go through all of the reports and annual reports and quarterly reports of all the mining stocks. And my thesis is not necessarily the mining stocks are undervalued, which they could be. My whole thesis is that there could be an increase of demand for gold in different countries, right, as people flock to gold if their local currency and local governments have debt crises, right? So for me, it's like, I want the thing that just is the simplest. All right, next question is, why will you buy more gold ETF stock or option calls? Yeah, I have no idea what I'm gonna do to tell you the truth, right? This is just kind of like the first step, and I just want to share my thought process. In fact, I haven't even told my wife about this. So this video will be the introduction to my wife on why we bought gold, right? So she'll have a better understanding of why we did this move. All right, let's go ahead and take some questions from viewers. Michael Chase says, do you think that Square can make a mini stock market where small merchants in the area can easily obtain investors? You can invest in these small businesses through Cash App. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like regulations. I mean, it's changing over time, but typically like the SEC wants to protect small investors, right? And so typically you want to be accredited, or they want people to be accredited to invest into certain companies, because investing into companies can be high risk, especially if you don't know what you're doing. And so I think that's probably, you know, one of the biggest challenges is investing into these companies is a difficult challenge even right now. All right, what are your thoughts on Visa, CryptoPatent, or views of Shop or Square, or other point of service providers that have conversion protection, effectively having their own currency? Yeah, you know, Yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, Bitcoin is such a, or blockchain, let's say, right? Is an interesting technology. And it's going to be used further. But I don't even think you need blockchain, right? Because, like, for example, if you're Square or if you're Apple or even PayPal, as long as you just keep the money within your system, right? Then you essentially give people all the financial services they need. They don't ever have to take the money out of their system. And so that's kind of like the big thing. In terms of, conversion protection, I'm not sure exactly, I'm not up to date on all that stuff. I do know, like, Shopify, though, is like, I'm starting to do a little bit more research on them. I do own a little bit of Shopify purchase, a couple months ago. But when I go shopping online, I start to see, check out with Shopify. And it's starting to make me think, well, like this is something Square should have done, more aggressively, done the PayPal checkout. And I feel like in some ways Shopify might be out executing actually Square in different ways. All right, Abe says, what college courses or certifications do you recommend a person right out of high school to pursue a career in investing? Yeah, I mean, there's different ways. The typical career in investing is not really what you probably expect. I mean, we're talking about, like, typically you go to Wall Street or, New York or a financial institution, they just put you in some desk job and you're just crunching numbers. It's not really like the fun and joy of investing. If you really want to be an independent investor, that's like out of the box, right? And you'd also, I think, need some type of capital to start with, right, to invest. If you don't have capital, then I think the best thing to do is start a business, right? Start making that capital. And whatever it takes for you to go ahead and make that capital, quickly, and then start investing would be the best thing. In terms of specific college courses, I think it's out in the open. Personally, for my kids, I'm encouraging them. They're still very young, right? They're not even in elementary school. But I'm encouraging them to actually have a broad area of interest and to go deep in those interests, right? Personally, like, I majored in political science and economics in college, but it also was cross-disciplinary. So I got to study history and languages, and I also went abroad to study. I got to study, culture, anthropology. I got to study after college, like, different things like philosophy. And I traveled a lot, and I got a lot of breadth in terms of many different areas, and that's allowed me to kind of have a different angle when I start thinking about investment topics. Another angle to go with is actually just to start something that you can actually make a good living very quickly with. So, for example, there's like Lambda School, which is a coding school if you're interested in coding, and that'll get you a job in coding very quickly, even though you're not even, you then you have to go to college, you just go to that school. So there's different options. All right, Ipster Star says, what if we are not in a depression? Yeah, that's the thing, that's why I don't recommend actually buying gold for everyone. It's your own, everyone has a personal decision and choice to make. That's why, like, for example, I'm keeping my, vast majority of assets in Tesla, a very, high volatile stock that could go down if we're in a global extended depression, but there's always a chance we're not in that depression, right? So all of this stuff is about probabilities and scenarios. And each person needs to make their own kind of estimates or predictions. All right, question is buying physical gold better? Yeah, it depends on your purpose of buying gold, right? I understand why people buy physical gold. A lot of times you can actually keep it physically and you know where it is. And there's actually some possible tax benefits actually to holding physical gold. Yeah, Dalian Sky says, why not physical gold, right? Yeah, you can buy physical gold. You can actually store it. You can buy it actually physical gold online, let's say, and store it in a Singapore vault, right? They'll have companies do that for you. However, I like to be more, a little bit more liquid with it. I just want to treat it more of a stock purchase, and I want to get some option calls. I just want a tiny portion of my portfolio in a hedge. All right, Lowry Kid says, which gold ETF did you buy specifically? I bought GLD. Why did I buy GLD? Just because it's one of the biggest, and I'm still in the beginning stages of really figuring out what I'm doing. All right, have you read Dalio's new release book, The Changing World Order? He addresses exactly what you're speaking about with the context of coronavirus. First two chapters are on his website. Yeah, so I checked out actually Dalio's Changing World Order chapters, his first few chapters that he released on LinkedIn. A lot of his stuff is very, like, it feels like it's copied from this debt crisis book. It's like similar stuff, similar charts, similar graphs, except for it's added some stuff about coronavirus in China. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. And I think maybe we could talk about it more actually in this channel as we go forward. All right, Kevin Yee says, what else can go up during debt crises that are good alternatives to gold? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like when you think about a debt crisis, it's like it's tough because you don't know which country is going to happen. Like, is it going to affect, like, let's say there's a South America debt crisis or Africa debt crisis or, you know, different parts of Asia, and you have to start thinking, like, how much does that affect the global economy, right? Does it really shock the whole economy, the whole global economy into a more severe recession or not? What else goes up during a debt crisis, you know? I mean, a lot of like commodity items, I think, will, you know, just stuff that's like, you know, some people are asking, like, oh, why don't you buy silver, right? That could go up too, right? Or other metals or other stuff. And yeah, you know, all this stuff can go up. Personally, I just buy gold because if you're in a country where your local currency and local government experience a debt crisis, are you gonna buy gold or silver, right? And in my opinion, if you've got money, you're gonna buy gold, right? As one of your key things that you're gonna transfer assets to. All right, Deepak says, what makes the V-shaped recovery unlikely? Yeah, well, I never actually said it was unlikely. I think it could be likely. I don't know. I just don't have clarity on what's going to happen. My personal opinion is, I think there are different scenarios at hand, right? We could have a V-shaped, we could have like a W or a drawn-out U-shaped. My hunch and what I'm getting prepared for personally is more like it's going to be drawn out. You know, I don't know what that exact shape is going to be, but I don't know. I just don't think we're going to hit like raging bull times again. Like next year, I don't think it's going to be like all just fine and dandy. I think this thing actually takes some time to get sorted out. eBay picks, danger, danger, not telling your wife. Yeah, you know, I should have, I t like some investments, I just do it, you know? And I share the rationale with my wife. I'm not a very emotional investor, actually. I kind of think through things for many, many months. So she knows that and she's cool with it. My first Tesla investment, I bought like $10,000 worth of Tesla in 2012. It was back in like maybe like September or something. And I just said, hey, I wrote my email to my wife. I'm like, hey, I bought Tesla $10,000 worth. And it was like 335 shares or something, right? And I go, hey, you know? And then she's like, oh, really? Okay, cool, right? And then I kept on just buying more shares and I just kept on emailing her, oh, another this much X number of shares, X amount amount. And she was cool throughout the whole time until like we found out that, you know, all of our cash was like basically like by the end of the year, like we all of our liquid cash went into Tesla and she's like, huh. Anyways, but she was up to date and she's cool with it. And yeah, she's probably appreciative that I'm able to do a video like this for her. Sandy says, what is your percent hedge split between balancing your equities versus GLD? Do you follow a percent max concentration rule for your positions? Now, you know, I'm a very concentrated investor personally, just because like I already have kind of a safety net with real estate and income. And so I'm not really concerned about getting to safer investments. So I kind of split up my basket where when I go into the stock market, I'm going for bigger returns, right? Because if I lose it all, it's actually not a terrible thing in the bigger picture for me or my family. So in that sense, I don't really follow this kind of like diversified kind of plan for a stock portfolio. I kind of want to get into the essence of investing, right? Finding the best companies out there. And so this is kind of a departure for me really to do a hedge with gold, but it's just something that I'm starting. It's a very small percent. Again, it's under 0.1% of my portfolio. So if I lose it all, it does means, you know, it doesn't mean much for me at all. All right, Lyle Kiss says, why not physical gold? Which gold ETC for Europeans? Yeah, I don't know the European market. Again, physical gold, I just want more leverage, actually, to tell you the truth. That's why I do option calls. I'm willing to take that risk because it's such a small position overall in my portfolio. And I'm not really trying to save money. That's the thing. I'm not really trying to save my portfolio. And if I was, maybe I'd do more gold. And I don't want to sell Tesla at this point. It's just too much taxes. And I want to bet long term on innovation. All right, Sugi Boogie says, as you seem pessimistic about the medium-term market outlook, what percent of your portfolio would you switch to cash gold? What signs that we're headed into depression are you looking at? Yeah, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't really have like a percent target on how much I want in cash or gold per se. For me personally, again, I have another basket of safe assets in real estate and other income-producing stuff. So my approach personally to stock investing is more higher risk, and so that because of that, I tend to be very, you know, leaning heavily into risk with my stock portfolio. So currently, you know, I have like, you know, up to 10% in my stock portfolio. It could be actually more if I count my Tesla position lower, which I should, you know, based upon like it could go down and taxes and all that stuff. So actually, I could be actually much higher than 10%. But I do have a decent portion in cash because I want to take advantage of some opportunities that potentially are there. I would probably personally have more in cash if I didn't have to get such a big tax hit. Most of my shares are like I bought in the $30 range for Tesla, and so I think about yeah, a good 60 to 70% of my Tesla is bought in $30 at $30, or so it's the capital gains tax is quite high. All right. I'm going to go ahead and end the chat. I know this has been a great discussion. I've actually been learning a lot from, you know, this community and the viewers, etc. All your comments and, you know, questions actually mean a lot, and they add a lot of value to this channel. If you can go ahead and please like this video, this will help get the word out and help YouTube share this video with more people. And go ahead and subscribe if you haven't. The whole point of this channel is not really to say, hey, pick this or do this, right? I don't really care actually, you know, whether anyone buys gold or not. Actually, to tell you the truth, I think everyone should go through their own thinking process and own kind of projections and figure out kind of their own investment philosophies. But my whole kind of hope is to help people think clearly, objectively from different angles. So hope you had a good time with this video. Hope this is helpful. And we'll see you in my next video. Thanks.